So in September 1968, my goal in life was to get a first class honours degree in psychology. And within 6 weeks, I was sitting in the middle of the street protesting for civil rights.
From Boldface, this is Fear of Missing Out. Young people living in the UK talking about the stuff we wish we'd learn in school.
Catholic and Protestant tend to be terms that we use that actually don't have an awful lot to do with faith.
It's about culture, it's about identity, it's about politics.
In each episode, a new presenter goes on a personal journey through the bits of British history that people aren't talking about enough. I'm Beth.
It was 1981. That same year, we were having the hunger strikes. Having watched the school develop, I realised that it wasn't a normal school in any way, shape or form.
This documentary includes descriptions of military and police violence. Take care, listening.
I'm 16 and I live in Ballymena, a small town outside Belfast in Northern Ireland. Almost everyone in my school is Catholic, like me. I've only ever made friends with people from Protestant families outside of school. In 2019, I got to be an extra in a movie. We had a few weeks of shooting away from home, so I made friends with the other young people on set. Protestants and Catholics. We had to do schoolwork because we were away filming for so long. That's when I first noticed that my Protestant friends were learning different things to me. The histories we learnt were different, the books we read were different, even the sports we played were different. 93% of students in Northern Ireland either go to a Catholic or Protestant school. That's so much higher than the rest of the UK. I want to know why education is so separated along religious lines in Northern Ireland.
The schools look different. They feel different. The uniforms are different.
This is Dr. Matthew Milligan.
I'm a researcher at Ulster University.
He specialises in the history of education policies and religion in Northern Ireland.
Yeah, I've been working for years to try to get to grips with why we still have the divisions that we have.
Someone once said that if you can think of any way of dividing kids, then we pretty much do it.
That's Tony Gallagher, Professor of Education at Queen's University.
And a lot of the research that I've done over many years is looking at the role of education in divided societies.
Right now, in Northern Ireland, there are two main types of school. We have the controlled sector, schools that are run by local authorities. Most people who go to these schools are Protestant, so we often call these Protestant schools.
The Protestant schools fly the Union flag in some places, take holidays along British lines, play British sports, hockey, rugby, cricket. The Catholic system then...
It's called the maintained system, run by the Catholic Church. Most people who go to these schools are from Catholic backgrounds.
They'd be playing Gaelic sports, they'd probably be learning Irish. Although all schools have to work to a common curriculum, the perspectives on history that might be taught are likely to be different. The books that are read in English classes are likely to be different.
Matthew Milligan and Tony Gallagher grew up in Belfast during the Troubles, the roughly 30-year violent conflict between nationalists and unionists in Northern Ireland, from the end of the 1960s to the late 1990s. Matthew went to a Protestant school.
When I was at school, we just boxed the other side. They do their thing, we do our thing. You were conscious of the different uniforms.
Yeah.
You knew the Catholic schools and you knew the Protestant schools.
Tony went to a Catholic school like me.
We were allowed to have our school badge on poppers so that we could take it off if we left the college. Because if you're walking through the city centre with the St. Malachy's badge on your blazer, that immediately identified you as a Catholic.
even still, like, say, for example, if you're walking down the street and you're walking in a particular school uniform, there are people that look at you.
Yeah.
In Ballymena, for example, specifically. So there's Catholic schools, there's Protestant schools, and they all get the same bus to school.
What happens on the bus?
No, like, the Catholics sit with the Catholics, the Protestants sit. Say, for example, if you're seen as a Catholic talking to someone from a Protestant school, like, people are a bit like, what are you doing? Like, that's just one of the complete stereotype of people's uniforms. And it's a bit, like, stupid, because it's like, they're all people.
It's very easy when you've no contact with the other side to develop a very simplistic view of the world.
They are bad. We are good. We are in the right. They are in the wrong.
People who were in the Troubles, who sort of grew up with that them and us attitude, have an influence on young people, so then young people grow up, so it's a them and us.
Absolutely.
One of the risks of having a divided school system is that it creates patterns of friendship which persist beyond school, that remains within your own community. That limits the extent to which you have an opportunity to understand some of the different sorts of viewpoints and perspectives that exist within society.
Catholic and Protestant tend to be terms that we use that actually don't have an awful lot to do with faith.
Yeah.
It's about culture, it's about identity, it's about politics, it's about aspiration, it's about all sorts of things.
I don't like it when people make assumptions about who I am just because they found out that I'm Catholic. I don't want to be doing the same to other people, which is one of the reasons I try so hard to make friends with people of different faiths outside of my school. There are official initiatives for this within the school system too. There's something called shared education, schemes that aim to bring together students from Catholic and Protestant schools for certain lessons or activities. Northern Ireland also does have a small number of integrated schools. These are schools that aim to have an even mix of people from all or no religious backgrounds.
Do you know when you go to school and you just think you're being normal, you're just going to school? Having watched the school develop, I realised that it wasn't a normal school in any way, shape or form.
This is Claire Bailey. She's a Green Party member of the Legislative Assembly, or MLA, in South Belfast. Claire's about the same age as Matthew Milliken and Tony Gallagher, who I've been talking to so far. So Claire also went to school during the Troubles. But Claire went to Laggan College.
This is Laggan College, a tiny school with only 31 pupils and two full-time teachers.
Northern Ireland's first ever integrated school.
Here, both Protestant and Roman Catholic children learn together.
Laggan College was set up in 1981 by a group of parents with no state funding. It was pretty DIY to say the least.
We didn't have a canteen. We were all bringing packed lunches. We had to come into school in the morning and set our classroom up. A storeroom in the hall where we kept fold up desks and chairs. And the blackboard was huge, big, tall blackboards on wheels. Big old-fashioned ones, and we had to come in the morning and take all this equipment out of the storeroom and set our classrooms up. And I remember at the time, because it was called Laggan College, all our friends thought that we were a bit snobby because we were going to a college and not school. Then we had to go back and tell them, we don't even have a school. But I remember my friends coming back and they were talking about the size of their schools. They'd go to the science labs, the home economics labs, the sports areas, and they were getting lost and trying to find their way around. There was nowhere to get lost in Laggan. It was one room, you know.
Matthew Milliken and Tony Gallagher's experiences of going to school in the 1980s were so tied up with the religion of their school. I asked Claire Bailey what it felt like going to a mixed religion school during the Troubles.
Yeah, I knew that there was Catholics and I knew that there was Protestants. I knew the conflict was happening, but we were just kids and we were all friends, and that's the way that it was.
Nowadays, 7% of pupils in Northern Ireland go to integrated schools.
70% of parents say they want to send their children to integrated schools.
Matthew Milliken.
But there aren't that many schools there that can accommodate them.
How did we end up in a situation where 70% of parents in Northern Ireland want integrated education for their kids, but only 7% of schools offer it? Northern Ireland has only existed as separate to the rest of the island of Ireland since the 1920s. Before that, Ireland was one place, and for a really long time it was under British rule. Partition happened in the early 1920s after the Irish War of Independence.
In 1921-22, there was an agreement brokered between the government in Britain and the government that was had been set up in Dublin that there would be a free state set up in the south and west of Ireland. There was a temporary border drawn between the northeastern area that was going to be inhabited predominantly by pro-British Protestants,
now known as Northern Ireland.
And the south and west of Ireland had a free state, which later became a republic, and that was occupied by pro-Irish Catholic population,
now known as the Republic of Ireland. Turns out that border wasn't so temporary.
What happened at the point of partition was that the Irish Free State, later to become the Republic of Ireland, the Catholic Church remained largely in control of most schools.
Tony Gallagher.
In Northern Ireland, things were done a bit differently. What the government wanted to do was to make this education system in Northern Ireland a good bit more like the system in England, where local authorities ran schools rather than the churches.
Basically, the state said, the closer you fit our model of a non-denominational system or are prepared to work under our rules, the more money we'll give you. But if you want to run your non-state system, we'll give you a little bit of money, but we won't give you the 100%.
Catholic Church declined to transfer any of its schools, largely because he didn't trust the unionist government. You know, this was partly because it just came out of a massive period of violence and conflict.
So the Catholic Church in the new state of Northern Ireland more or less kept on its system from pre-partition, and the Protestant churches handed their schools over to the state.
The Protestant churches only handed their schools over when they get guarantees that they would still retain a role with the schools. And that's why in the control schools, Protestant churches have automatic rights of representation on the boards of the schools.
And that's roughly the way the school system stayed. The mainly Catholic maintained sector and the mainly Protestant controlled sector. People seem to have been asking questions about whether education should be separated by religion ever since partition. But the system we have now still looks very similar to how it did in the 1920s. Why did it take so long for Northern Ireland to begin integrating education?
The housing estate on which I grew up was not segregated, but we went to segregated schools.
This is Bernadette Michalski.
How did you feel just before you got up to speak?
Most indignant. Most angry.
Bernadette's been a civil rights activist since she was about my age. In 1969, when she was just 21, Bernadette was, at the time, the youngest ever woman to be elected as an MP. She's so class.
I wasn't really very nervous, because I was very confident in myself.
In Northern Ireland, religious segregation is political. I wanted to speak to someone who spent a lot of their life thinking about that.
I had to walk past the state school, which we always knew as the Protestant school. We didn't know we were a Catholic school, but we always called that the Protestant school. And occasions when we would walk past that school, children would stand up on the railings and insult us, including some of the people I played with at home. School is not the only place where people learn. Children have learnt a great deal of informal learning before they even go to primary school. Because not only are our schools segregated, our communities are segregated, our housing estates are segregated, our electoral areas are segregated. It colours everything.
my parents grew up during the Troubles. It's the single biggest thing that shaped their political identities. Bernadette's a bit older than my parents. She was a huge part of the Northern Irish civil rights movement, which happened just before the Troubles.
The civil rights movement in 1968 was a protest movement, a mass protest movement, about the unequal treatment of the population who were Catholic. And it wasn't about religion. The origins of it were in the partitioning of Ireland. It was that the majority of Catholics were nationalists,
meaning they were pro-Ireland.
And so when you put the northern state together, you had one third of the population who objected to the state's existence.
The northern Protestant population had the majority and they had a Westminster-style government.
Matthew Milliken.
Two-thirds voted for the Protestant parties, one-third voted for the Catholic parties, and the Protestant parties were always in power. And as with any political power, they acted in the interests of the people that elect them. They invested heavily in Protestant areas, in Protestant schools, in Protestant housing, and even the infrastructure. Beth, if you're living out in the north there, you'll know the motorway stops in Coleraine, which is a Protestant town, rather than going on to Derry, which is a Catholic town.
That's so crazy. I've never even imagined that even road infrastructure in Northern Ireland is still somehow related to Catholic Protestant politics. In 1968, the Northern Irish civil rights movement began. It demanded equal rights for Catholics in jobs and housing, and one person, one vote. Bernadette McCallisky was a huge part of this movement, and she was only 19 years old.
The civil rights movement became my life, Beth. I loved learning. So in September 1968, my goal in life was to get a first-class honours degree in psychology. And within 6 weeks, I was sitting in the middle of the street protesting for civil rights. By Easter 69, Queen's University wouldn't let me sit my exams because they said I'd spent so long sitting in the street.
I thought that integrated education would have made sense as a demand in the civil rights movement, but actually it wasn't really a focus at all. I asked Tony Gallagher why that was.
The civil rights movement was primarily concerned about issues on discrimination. Catholic schools weren't treated exactly the same as controlled or Protestant schools at the time, but not at such a level that this was seen as egregious discrimination against the schools. There wasn't much of a demand around doing anything to change the schools. So it didn't feature as part of the civil rights movement at all.
So how did we go from there to the opening of the first integrated school in Northern Ireland, Laggan College, in 1981?
The civil rights movement was about equality and second-class citizenship. But because of what created the second-class citizenship, the national question, the question of partition, always cuts into it. So what started basically about social and economic and political rights within a year was again pulled out into a question of nationalism and unionism.
Bernadette was at the Battle of the Bogside, otherwise known as Bloody Sunday. It's the event that a lot of people point towards as the beginning of the Troubles.
It was a big march of 25,000 people who had gathered to protest against internment. And the British Army opened fire on the march and killed people. I was a speaker, so I was standing on the platform looking the whole way down. I started to say to people that they wouldn't shoot us, they're firing over our heads. Realising when I was kind of halfway through that sentence that I was wrong, I could see my eyes were telling me, yes, they are shooting us. It changed this place, you know, it changed the It changed the history of this place. The worst thing that they did was not that they killed people, that was bad enough, but that they lied about it, and that the government lied about it, and the Home Secretary lied about it, and the press lied about it. It was traumatic. And it's not that it was the only atrocity. It's not that it was the only killing of large numbers of people. The state killed its own second-class citizens rather than accept their demands, rather than be challenged by them. And that sense that that was what happened led hundreds and hundreds of young people to take up arms against the state.
Yeah.
Bloody Sunday started a war. And when you look back over all the killing, all the dying, all the pain, all the imprisonment that followed on after that, it marked people forever.
The Troubles were a long, violent conflict that started in the late 1960s. The conflict was between those fighting for Northern Ireland to rejoin the Republic of Ireland, nationalists, and those fighting to keep Northern Ireland part of the UK, unionists. In general, people from Catholic backgrounds tend to hold nationalist beliefs, and people from Protestant backgrounds tend to hold unionist beliefs. Nationalist and unionist beliefs can really vary in strength and scale. My family is Catholic by culture, but not very religious, and we really to and fro in terms of nationalism and unionism, and you do sometimes have nationalist Protestants and vice versa. But you often find people here using the terms Catholic and nationalist and then Protestant and unionist interchangeably. That's why you might hear people talking about the Troubles as a Catholic-Protestant conflict.
Whenever the violence broke out, there was a lot of people look to the fact of there being separate schools to say, look, you're having violence between Catholics and Protestants. You send Catholic and Protestant young people to separate schools. Surely these two things must be linked in some way.
In 1978, the House of Lords passed the Dunlaith Act, which allowed existing schools in the controlled sector to transform into integrated schools. Nothing much happened for the next 3 years, until 1981, one of the most violent and intense years of the Troubles.
The level of violence, there were people being shot every day. It was a war zone. Belfast was a war zone in 1981.
And in this really tense and pretty extreme atmosphere, a group of parents from different religious backgrounds got together and founded Laggan College. The Laggan College parents faced huge opposition from both the Catholic and Protestant school sectors and couldn't get state support.
They managed to get hold of an old scout hall. Just the courage of setting up a school and to try to come up with a different way of doing things. Hugely inspirational.
We were met at the side of the road at Shaw's Bridge by the principal, Sheila Greenfield, at the time, because there was so much media outside the front gate of the building.
Claire Bailey, Green Party MLA and one of the 28 students in the first year of Laggan College in 1981. She's talking about her first day at school.
There were protests that they didn't want to see this school happening. There was an armed RUC guard at the time as well, trying to keep things under control.
What was your understanding of integrated education when you started at Laggan? And what did you think about it at the time?
Okay, so I was just turned 11. So at the time, what I thought about it was I was going to big school. I do remember when we were starting to think about RE, you know, obviously these conversations that happened with those who were founding the school. But I remember it was back in those days, it was so democratic, Beth. You know, every decision that was being made was explained to us as children, even down to what Bible the school would be using for their RE classes. I can't tell you now, but it was a New Testament version, and we were sat down as a group, and we were talked through why the school had decided to choose this and the rationale behind that. And when I look at back again with older eyes, and I put the sort of socio-political context of the day in context of when Lagan was starting, I mean, it was 1981, the conflict was pretty rife. You know, that same year we were having the hunger strikes. So, you know, I was seeing on the streets the real dire situation that we were in. Looking back as an adult, I have so much respect for the staff and the parents who really kept that going. There was a lot of people, you know, not wanting to see this school happen.
Now, 41 years after Lagan College opened, Northern Ireland has 65 grant-aided integrated schools. That's more than no integrated schools, but we're still a massively divided education system.
Integrated education doesn't suit the traditional sectarian segregation of the system.
Matthew Milliken.
When you start drawing a question about that, who then votes for those old parties? There's no benefit for them in having children coming together and finding common ground. They rely on having a segregated, divided, opposed society for retaining their power bases.
I'm quite interested in the point you made about, say, like politicians and different parties. It's a bit like if they continue to create a segregation in education, it's a bit like selfish of sort, because it's like they're not thinking about the young people of Northern Ireland.
Serving their interests, yeah. It's not necessarily serving the interests of society as a whole.
Yeah.
The main initiative which was pursued in the latter part of the 2000s was work that I was very heavily involved in around shared education.
Tony Gallagher.
And that was to try to create collaborative networks in local areas. And young people would move between the schools to take classes, and teachers would move between the schools to work with each other. It's not integrated schools. It's not creating integrated education in its purest sense. And there are some people within the integrated education movement who don't think it's enough, and that's a perfectly legitimate viewpoint. The other really interesting development in the last 10 years or so has been the growth of the number of young people who don't describe themselves as either Catholic or Protestant. So there's been a growth in the, if you like, the other category within schools. That needs to be part of the consideration as well.
Well, you see, if it was up to me, I wouldn't have any religion in schools at all.
Bernadette Mikulski.
I think if God made the world, he's perfectly happy and capable of looking after people's faith, morals and discipline without the help of the Education Authority of Northern Ireland. And I don't think we'll ever make progress on this island until we have that kind of education. But who listens to me, Beth?
Thank you for listening to Fear of Missing Out. I'm Beth. Fear of Missing Out is a 6-part series produced by Jesse Lawson. You can find us wherever you listen to podcasts. Anton Ferry is our assistant producer for this episode, and the executive producer is Steve Urquhart. Thank you to Maya Miller-Lewis for our original music, and to our historical consultant, Gavin Duffy.
Thank you to Toby Malamo for our original artwork. Our mixing is by Mike Woolley.
Thank you to our advisory board, Arlie Adlington, Ellie Robson, Imani Mason-Jordan, Lynette Nora Onek, and Emanuela Quinorte. Fear of Missing Out is a Boldface production supported by the Audio Content Fund.